Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the deadly and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the headlines, our mission is to help you understand what is actually occurring and how these events will shape our world over the next 10, 15, and 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms, through evidence and reason, as opposed to faith, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number is toll-free for any of you listening today who would like to participate in this discussion. Over the next 2 hours, it is 877-300-7645. Yesterday, we were sharing a story that was the epitome of hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is something today that is rampant, really, I think, in all manner of life, where the person who is actually guilty of whatever malfeasance is being directed at others, that the others are not guilty of what the speaker himself or herself is actually doing. I witnessed it in probably 70% of the emails I receive where somebody will get themselves all in a twit and will lambaste an individual, accusing them of doing something that they themselves are doing, when the person that they're attacking isn't doing that at all. Now, in politics, it's a very well-known tactic. In politics, the individual doing it knows that they themselves are guilty of it. You know, for example, if a politician comes out and says that an individual is a big spender, and their rival, whoever they're campaigning against, you know, is a insider big spender. Well, typically that means that the person making the statement is an insider big spender, and what they're attempting to do is muddy the waters. If they can take whatever their most vulnerable point is and muddy it by accusing their opponent of it, then when their opponent now has to take time to defend themselves and says, no, I'm not that, my opponent is that, most people are simply confused. And so the tactic works very well in politics. Now, the fact that it works well does not mean it's good. It is. It's immoral. But the tactic works extremely well in politics, and it typically works in religion. Now, the only difference in religion and politics, at least for some, is that in politics, the politician almost always knows that what they're doing is disingenuous. They know that they themselves are guilty of whatever it is they're accusing their opponent of doing. You know, when Obama took the holier-than-thou, almost crying attitude at the loss of his most recent gun control campaign, where he brought in all of the brought in the parents of whose children were killed at Sandy Hook, at least those who agreed with his position, and then talked about how it was inappropriate what the opposition had done when he, in fact, was doing the very same thing himself. That's what I mean. And politicians know that they're phony as imitation cheese. In religion, not so much. They use the tactic, but I'm not sure that all religious individuals are that rational, where they actually can assess themselves and know that what they're doing is disingenuous. But nonetheless, we were telling the story because, and I'm going to frame this, is this is a huge societal trend. It has always been prevalent. It's just that it is vastly more prevalent today than it was 20 years ago, and it will be absolutely dominant. So that when you hear a politician or religious person speak, that almost 100% of the time we are going to find that what they're saying that is bad is true of them when they're applying it to someone else. So it will be nothing but lies. In that light, Pope Francis called on world leaders, as we learned yesterday, to end the cult of money and to do more for the poor in his first major speech on the financial crisis. And the fact is that there has been no institution, probably in the history of humankind, that has created a more repressive or larger or longer lasting cult of money than the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, its power is derived from money. It has stolen the money of poor people from around the world for centuries. He then went on to say that free market economics had created a tyranny. And so it's the opposite of what's true, of course. Free market economies are what remove tyrannical regimes. They disempower tyrannical regimes. You know, for example, when people were given the opportunity to read the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and even the eyewitness accounts from the historical witnesses themselves, as opposed to being manipulated exclusively by the Roman Catholic Church, when there was some ability of individuals to make a difference in their own lives, the power of the Roman Catholic Church crumbled in Europe. They went from being absolute dominant, this union of cleric and king that had ruled Europe with an iron hand, creating lords and serfs, impoverishing, enslaving the vast preponderance of people for the greed of cleric and king, that crumbled primarily because individuals were given the ability to actually influence their own lives. Well, you can correlate that directly to free enterprise. Once the regime that the Roman Catholic Church was incredibly involved in subjecting the mass of peoples to, in terms of feudalism, fascism and feudalism, once their power waned as a result of people getting access to God's word directly, what we find is the rise of independence and people no longer buying into the feudal system. And it was free enterprise, the individual's ability to help themselves and help their family and meet their family's needs, as opposed to being subjected to the tyranny of cleric and king, that lifted the Western world out of the impoverishment of a tyrannical church. So here what we have is the current pope of the Roman Catholic Church, who I do not think is the sharpest knife in the drawer. I think that they based upon the comments I've heard this man make, I do think that he has a subpar IQ. So not everything is it's when he says things, we ought not think that he's being thoughtful all the time. But what he has said here in terms of free market economies created a tyranny, the opposite of that is true. The Roman Catholic Church created a tyranny, and the opposite of free market economics is always tyrannical, either through communism or fascism. But this pope, and this is what is interesting, is if you study the amalgamation of world leadership that will have to be manifest for the tribulation to play out as it is predicted, what you're going to have to see is socialist secular humanism, Islam, and Christianity, particularly Roman Catholicism, all merge, all become an effective unit together. So the first thing this pope said is that we need to reach out and to have interfaith dialogue and recognize that Muslims and Islam is a very similar religion. That was the first thing he said. Now the next thing he says is he wants to be opposed to free enterprise. Well, there's only two options once you leave free enterprise. They are communism and fascism, which are essentially the same foe. Now, Europe during the time that the Catholic Church held sway was fascist, feudalistic. And I have always thought that the world was moving towards a fascist dictatorship as opposed to communist, because that empowers the manipulators to become fabulously rich and makes them co-conspirators. So here he is aligning himself with socialist secular humanism. This is the trinity, if you will, of evil that will ultimately permeate the conditions that we witness during the tribulation, literal hell on earth. And he has put himself straight in his church, right in that position. Now, it's amazing, too, that if Roman Catholics thought as opposed to reacted, The moment he said this, the moment he talked about, we're just going to get along really fabulously with Muslims because we all believe in the same God and we're all Abrahamic and we're all just you know, brothers and sisters. They ought to have all said, you know, this man is a complete fraud. The notion that he is speaking for God is nonsense. I'm going to leave the church. When he said that free market economics created a tyranny, as opposed to the other way around, any thinking Catholic ought to have said, I'm out of here. This guy is obviously a fraud. And since he claims to speak for God, the whole edifice is a fraud. Now, they ought to have said that when it became obvious that the Pope himself and the previous Pope were instrumental in the protection and ongoing torment that was associated with priestly pedophilia. Or they could have just read Yah's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms and realized that almost everything they say is opposed to what God has taught us. Now, what's interesting, this quote from Pope Francis is, money has to serve, not rule. Again, moronic. Now, any time that you're dealing with a demagogue, you get moronic statements. Money is to the individual who wields it as the gun is to the individual who shoots it. Money serves the individual who uses it. If you go to the hamburger joint down the street and you hand them money, they will give you food. If you do not hand them money, they will not give you food. You know, money always serves. It is the essence of all three economic systems: fascism, communism, and free enterprise. Money never rules. The dollar never says, hey, man, you know, you must now take me to the sporting goods store because I want to be in their cash register. It's absolutely absurd. And then, you know, he is urging ethical financial reforms. Meanwhile, the Vatican's own bank announced that it would publish its annual report for the first time. Isn't that funny? So one is calling, the pot is calling the kettle black. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the malfeasance and the hypocrisy of the Roman Catholic Church, this time relative to their economics. The Institute for Works of Religion, which has been at the center of various financial scandals in recent years, is to hire an external accounting firm to ensure that it meets international standards against money laundering. The Institute for Works of Religion is the Vatican's bank. It has been exposed for not only money laundering in drug schemes, many of which have actually been perpetrated by the Roman Catholic clerics themselves, particularly the Legions of Christ, the Marcial in Mexico. But they have also, and they received large donations even from the Mexican drug cartels. But in addition to that, there's a lot of cronyism. That's what the butler was ultimately defrocked for, if you can defrock a butler, was that he gave to the press the internal correspondence between cardinals and the Pope and archbishops and cardinals, which showed that nepotism and graft were rampant in the Roman Catholic Church. So if there is an institution that is guilty of this, it's Roman Catholicism. And up to this point, they have never published any accounting of their affairs. I mean, so you couldn't really find a more manipulative, covert money operator than the Roman Catholic Church. The Institute is considered to be one of the most secret banks in the world. Yeah, it probably is the most secret large bank. The biblical reference, the pontiff said that free enterprise business people worship the golden calf. Now, free enterprise is based upon individuals creating businesses, individuals taking the risk, both of their own labor and of their own savings, to create things. And this notion that those who strive to succeed in business, and free enterprise is dominated by small business, where fascist countries are dominated by large businesses that are owned by the oligarchs, that the average Joe who goes to work and does, even if he owns his own hamburger stand, that he's doing it because he's worshiping the golden calf, it's absurd. The golden calf was not a monetary system. This is what the Pope is wrong against. Why I say I don't think he's the sharpest utensil in the drawer. Wrong metaphor. The golden calf is a religious metaphor. It's the image, principal image of the god of Egypt. The Apis bull cult was the primary cult of Egypt. We don't talk a lot of conversation about it because of it's just so much simpler to talk about Osiris and Amun-Ra and the like. But the Apis bull cult is, if you're going to do a history of Egypt, it's really where you focus if you want to understand their chronology and who did what to whom. And it's this golden bull with a circular halo between its horns that represented the Lord in the Egyptian religion. That was God. And the bull is associated with the Lord, the pagan god, for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons is that during the spring equinox, where days and nights are of equal length, the sun crosses the constellation of Taurus, the bull, at that time. And so the bull, whether you go to Babylon or Assyria or to Egypt, was the symbol of the pagan god of these religions. And so when the children of Israel were freed from Egypt, some of them took the Egyptian religion with them. And they built a religious object to worship, which was the golden calf. It is not a monetary symbol. It is a religious symbol. But, of course, this pontiff, being the head of the world's largest religion, doesn't want you to recognize it for what it is, that God was opposed to them, actually killed them, because they were religious. He did not kill them because they had monetary interests. In fact, it was exactly the opposite. When the children of Israel were left Egypt, the Egyptians, knowing that they had treated them poorly, provided them with a considerable amount of wealth. They just said, "You know, your God has clearly demonstrated that He's real. We treated you horribly, and here's some parting presents, going away gifts, so that your God and you aren't so mad at us going forward." And what they did is, rather than keeping those, they collectively used them to create this stupid idol. It was the opposite of economic greed. Now, we're going to return to Shattering Myths and talk more, not only about this story, but we're going to move on to an exorcism allegedly performed by Pope Francis, when Shattering Myths returns in a moment. Yes, in a biblical reference, the pontiff said, "The worship of the golden calf of old has found a new and heartless image in the current cult of money." And as we have been talking, the worship of the golden calf had nothing to do with economics. It had all to do with religion. And Yahweh was so opposed to the children of Israel that he was leading to into his home, being religious, those who decided that they would be religious, he killed. Just gone. Something to think about, and obviously this Pope doesn't understand that God's opposition is to religion. It is not to money. The Pope struggled, our people struggled to live, and frequently in an undignified way, under dictatorships of economy which lack any real human goal, Francis said. You know, there are, in socialist secular humanism, which manifests itself principally as communism, the ascribed goal is to provide for people. I mean, that's how it sells itself, is that, you know, it's to take money and possessions away from those that only care about themselves and give it to people. It has a human goal. And yet, when you see it deployed, what you see is people treated like rubbish. That rather than lifting people up in a dignified way, it treats people in the most undignified way. You have no freedoms of any kind under those systems. You lose your freedom to education. You lose your freedom of movement. You lose your freedom relative to economics. All your freedoms are usurped. Even freedom of speech are gone in any controlled system. And so once again, what the Pope is proposing would lead us to the thing that he is attacking. Then he says, I would like a church that is poor and is for the poor. Well, that's an outright lie. If he wanted a church that was poor and for the poor, he would simply empty the bank accounts worldwide of the Roman Catholic Church. He would sell all of their cathedrals. He would stop with the Pope Mobile and the fancy slippers and ring and all of that sort of thing. And it would all be gone. He'd give them to the poor. Hi, Scott.
I agree with you completely on what you're saying. I just wanted to bring up another point. Wasn't he the one that they gave him like this big fancy apartment in whatever country he was from? But he chose to live in like pretty much a different spot that was much, much less... I believe I read something like that about this guy.
Yeah, there's some symbolism there, but the part of it that's is disingenuous, and there's a lot of people who recognize that kind of symbolism and who play with it. Now, this guy, of course, is now living in the Vatican, so he's living as a king.
Oh no, I agree.
But when the big rub on Francis when he was in Argentina is that he sided with the Perones and the others that were so greedy and so manipulative of the people, and that the Roman Catholic Church's tendency to embrace the political power for its own empowerment is horrid. They embraced the Nazis in World War II. They were literally stride by stride with the Croats that were so murderous in World War II. And in Argentina, the Roman Catholic Church was a co-conspirator along with the dictators that that raped the people, and this Pope was right there step by step with them. So when he was given the choice of conscience to do the right thing as it relates to such people, he didn't.
Well, he kind of failed at that many years ago when he became a priest.
Yeah, the Roman Catholic Church in Argentina has a horrid past. It's amazing that they picked someone from there, recognizing how really repulsive the Roman Catholic Church was in terms of it working against the people. And it wasn't just economic crimes that were being perpetrated in Argentina. Anyone who opposed the regime of the Perones and others, they're tortured. And the Roman Catholic Church was step by step, side by side with them, just as they were in the Inquisition. I mean, there seems to be nothing that the Roman Catholic Church loves more than a little bit of torture, because it has a ability to cause the people to fear, and those who fear obey. So it is a sad story, and what we have here is absolute, total, and pure hypocrisy. We have Larry on the line, but before I introduce Larry, I want to introduce our next story. Pope Francis' fascination with the devil took on a remarkable new twist on Tuesday a week ago, with a well-known exorcist insisting that Francis helped liberate a Mexican man possessed by four different demons, despite the Vatican's insistence that no such papal exorcism took place. The case concerns a 43-year-old husband and father who traveled to Rome from Mexico to attend Francis's Mass on Sunday in St. Peter's Square. At the end of the Mass, Francis blessed several wheelchair-bound faithful, as he always does, including a man possessed by the devil, according to the priest, who brought him the Reverend Juan Rivas. Before I share more of this story, I'd like to get Larry's input, calling in from Florida. How are you this morning, Larry?
Oh, I'm fine, Yada. This sounds miraculous. Please continue.
Okay, well, here's the story. Francis laid his hands on the man's head, and he recited a prayer. The man heaved a couple of times, shook, and then he slumped in his wheelchair. And what it sounds like, have you ever seen the television events where Benny Hinn does his healing in a meal service?
Where he brings people? Actually seen the guy on YouTube. Yeah.
He walks up to somebody that's, you know, says, "Oh, I've got a stammer, I've got a stumble, I've got a, you know, I've got cancer in me." And he walks up to them and he puts his hand towards their head, and they fall over, go boom.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, I had the occasion to meet old Benny Hinn, and his closest friend happened to be a very, very close friend of mine. And this friend, one time, because Benny Hinn, you know, flew around in a G3, I mean, he had big-time bucks doing this, and he asked Benny Hinn, he says, "You know, I've been watching your dinner and a show for a long time. Have you ever healed anyone?" And he says, "No." Nope. Anyway, this guy couldn't fall down, go boom, because he was sitting in a wheelchair. But he didn't stand up and walk out of that wheelchair. I'll guarantee you that. No, you know, people are affected by religion. I mean, that's one of the things that causes religion to be so captivating for people. Is they say, you know, well, I feel the power. You can't tell me that my relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ isn't real. I feel Him in my life. You can't tell me that he doesn't have the power to save. I've witnessed the change in people. You know, Mate Teo, the Mormon football player at the Catholic University that had the imaginary girlfriend. You couldn't tell him that imaginary girlfriend wasn't real. People have relationships with imaginary characters all the time. You ask any 18-year-old boy who thinks that the girl across the street is really cute, but she won't go out with him. And he's had an imaginary relationship in his head with her for sure.
Kind of how faith works, I think.
It's exactly how faith works. So this guy, he believed in the Pope, who's a complete fraud. We've just looked at the story on economics. He's complete and utter fraud. But this guy from Mexico believed in him and decided, you know, he's going to come. He wanted to come to Pentecost. Now, Pentecost, I'm pretty sure wasn't on a Sunday. But nonetheless, Pentecost was being celebrated on a Sunday by the Roman Catholic Church. And so he wanted to be there at Pentecost. And he was at the end of the wheelchair group. And when the Pope got to him, boy, it was a cathartic experience, and he shook. And that was considered to be an exorcism. The images broadcast worldwide prompted the television station of the Italian Bishops' Conference to declare that, according to several exorcists, there was no doubt that Francis had either performed an exorcism or a simpler prayer to free the man from the devil. So, now, rather than four specific demons in him, it's now one devil that was in him. And that the man slumping in his chair and shaking was the sign that the devil had entered him. Now, you know, Satan and I are not exactly on buddy-buddy terms, but I got a pretty good idea who he is. And I am fairly certain that he doesn't think that the best use of his time is to go and possess a guy in a wheelchair from Mexico. Now, I think if you're looking for the devil, you probably wouldn't want to go to this guy in Mexico that's sitting there. And if you were the devil and you wanted to get some bang for your buck, there's a lot of people. You know, I'd go for Obama, maybe. I'd go for the Pope himself, maybe.
Well, you know, Hollywood movies really help in this regard. You know, when you turn on the TV and you got the wise, spiritual, usually old black leader that knows happens when a demon is around, you know, and it's absolutely amazing. And all this stuff works and meshes in people's minds and screws them up, and they're confused, and they really believe that. And by the way, do these four demons have a name or anything?
No. Beelzebub, no, they didn't have a name. More of the story, and I'm going to share with you why in the second hour of the program, why it is that the primary miracle attributed to Christians is exorcising demons. We'll talk about that in the second hour, but a little more on the story. The Vatican was a bit more cautious. In a statement Tuesday, it says that Francis didn't intend to perform any exorcism. It didn't say he didn't perform an exorcism. It just says he didn't intend to. But as he often does, for the sick or the suffering, he simply intended to pray for someone who was suffering and who was presented to him. The Reverend Gabriel Amorth, a leading exorcist for the Diocese of Rome, said that he performed a lengthy exorcism of his own on this very man Tuesday morning and ascertained that he was possessed by four separate demons. The case was related to the legalization of abortion in Mexico City, he said. Okay, so the legalization of abortion in Mexico City caused this man to be possessed by four separate demons, and this fellow, the Gabriel Amorth, recognized those four demons, and yet he himself couldn't cast them out. Okay, that's where we are in the story at this point. For all of you faithful types, we'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So we have Reverend Gabriel Amorth, who is a leading exorcist working out of the Vatican in Rome. He said that he performed a lengthy exorcism on this same man on Tuesday morning and ascertained that he was possessed by four demons. Now, what I don't know is, was the this exorcism on Tuesday morning following the Sunday supposed exorcism, or was it preceding it? So if it was preceding it, then the guy could not have been, by one standard, possessed by the devil. He would have been possessed by these four demons, and so somebody got the story wrong. And if it was after it, then how could it have been an exorcism when the guy still got four demons part of him? Somebody is not checking their sources and getting their story correct. But just think about this. We've already said, you know, Satan isn't going to go for the little guy in the wheelchair down there in Mexico. If he's going to try to influence the world, that's not where you go. Why would Satan say, you know, they passed a law on abortion, therefore I think I'm going to protest. Now, if you're Satan, death is good. Abortion is good. Why would you be opposed? Why would you take it your venom out on this poor little guy if the Mexico City did what you would have liked? I mean, you assumed. Yeah, of course. But anyway, he said that that he did perform a lengthy exorcism. But he says that, you know, that exorcism aren't just done according to the rituals and the rules of exorcism. By the way, there are no rules or rituals associated with exorcism according to Yahweh or Yosha. There is no exorcism at all. Not even a hint of it in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Not even a hint. There are a few that are mentioned associated with Yahusha in the eyewitness accounts. They're really poorly attested, most of the time that there is a reference to driving out demons, it is almost always associated with false prophets. And we'll consider one of those warnings at the second hour of the show. So here the Roman Catholic Church has created their whole bag of tricks, if you will, rules, official rules for playing the game of exorcisms, kind of like the rabbis have done with foods that are kosher. So Rivas took the Vatican line, saying that it was no exorcism, but Francis merely said a prayer to free the man from the devil. Now, that's not what Francis said. He just said, you know, the guy's not feeling good, and I'm going to make a little prayer and say, you know, I hope you feel better. Since no one heard what he said, including the man who was right there, you can say that he did a prayer for liberation, but nothing more. No, the Vatican says that was not my intent. So the Vatican saying that I didn't try to liberate him from the devil. I was just, the poor guy was in a wheelchair. He came to me because he wanted me to pray for him. I made a little prayer for him. Rivas wrote on his Facebook page, which was confirmed by the religious orders of the Legionnaires for Christ. The Legionnaires for Christ are the group that Marcel was head of. He was a drug user. He was a pedophile. He was also adulterous, if you will. He fathered children from women. He abused sexually young boys that were under his care, and all the while he was a significant consumer of recreational drugs in founding the Legionnaires of Christ. But he was one of Pope Paul's favorites because he not only provided more priests into the priesthood than any other individual, but he also was the largest contributor to the Roman Catholic Church, providing billions that he had scammed from Roman Catholics in Mexico and also in the United States. It was like the Domino Pizza guy fell in love with Marcio. Fueling speculation that Francis did indeed perform an exorcism is his frequent reference to Satan in his homilies. So when old Francis does a sermon, he refers to Satan frequently, as well as an apparent surge in the demand for exorcisms among the faithful, despite the irreverent treatment of the rite and the treatment that it receives from Hollywood. In his very first homily as Pope on March 14th, Francis warned cardinals in the Sistine Chapel the day after he was elected that he who does not pray to the Lord prays to the devil. Yeah, I'm so glad we did his little bit on economics at the beginning of this program, showing that everything he said was the opposite of the truth. So is this. The Lord is Satan. He who prays to the Lord prays to the devil, wittingly or unwittingly. The opposite of what the man said is true. He then went on May 4th to say that we need to have more dialogue, except with Satan, with the prince of this world. You can't have dialogue. Let's this be clear, he warned. And yet he's speaking for him. We'll return to Shattering Myths and consider this from Yahweh's point of view after the commercial break.